Blog Talk Radio.
November, this is Ken from Wormhole Riders in San Francisco, and today we're with a very special guest from Toronto, Robin Dunn. You know him all from a great series of movies that he's done over the past years since Sanctuary. Robin Dunn worked with Amanda Tapping and Ryan Robbins and Emily Ullerup and Agam Darshi on the program, Sanctuary, which set the stage for what's happening in the entertainment industry with the original web series, which we followed back in 2007, picked up for Sci-Fi, four famous years on Sci-Fi, on Space Channel. Without further ado, I'd like to say good morning, Robin Dunn.
Good morning, Ken, and Wormhole Riders. Lovely to be with you. Thank you so much. I love your opening song. I remember that was the dance that I was always trying to dance with girls at the end of the high school dances. And you know, every now and then I got lucky, but,
that was a great song to dance to because the original Led Zeppelin version was about 10 minutes long, right?
It was about 10 minutes long, and I have this whole thing worked out where, you know, different parts in the song were meant for different moves. I won't get into detail, but, you know, certainly when the guitar solo kicked in, if you were not at second base by then, nothing was going to happen that night, so which never really happened for me. I never really got there. I never even got on base. But you know.
Well, you know, Robin, I didn't know that. You know, you're a Canadian. I didn't know you were a fan of American baseball. But we'll take it off the air about the different bases and what went on. And I know there's some Canadians that like that. But I want to also thank you for taking the time today. We know that you're involved as a producer and actor in a great new play up in Toronto. Strain injury. The hashtag, folks, on Twitter is hashtag RSI. Same thing on Facebook, Twitter. Just really a great play coming up. Before we get into the questions, which some have been sent in to us by the fans, I'd like to also introduce our Canadian producer, Patricia Stewart-Bertrand. She is about 3 hours outside of Edmonton. Kind of north, heading towards Yellowknife, where Amanda Tapping is, working with CBC Arctic Air this week. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning, Ken. And yes, I am in the north. That's why I like the nickname Arctic Goddess, because I'm used to the cold and the polar bears and the igloos and the ice and snow. And so any place warm right now would be nice. If anybody's got any money and wants to buy me a plane ticket to San Diego, hey, I'm listening. Robin, it's great to have you with us today.
It's very nice to be here. Now, Patricia, I'm standing out on the street here in Toronto, and it's probably about zero, and I'm cold. What's it like where you are? This is probably tropical for you.
It's a balmy minus 20, and hey, it's just normal for us to have that kind of cold in Alberta. It's just part of the landscape. You get used to it.
Lovely. We won't even talk to Ken because he's in San Francisco.
Yes, let's beat up on Ken.
Yeah, it's time to beat up on me. Actually, it's been down near freezing here, but that's nothing compared to poor Patricia. She's up at the North Pole. Robin, and we often tease her, but yeah, you guys are heading into your winter here. You know, winter for us is 32 degrees or 0 degrees
yeah.
centigrade. But being by the bay, there's kind of heavy humidity, and we get the wind here. It can actually be like a chill factor about minus 10. But in any event, Robin, you have been very busy the last few months. You and I have been chatting a little bit by email about repetitive strain injury, and you put together a real great crew up there. Can you tell us a little bit about when and with whom did you envision RSI?
Well, my friend and writing partner, Amy Matisio, she came to me. We're adapting a play into a film by a playwright by the name of Rob Van Meenen. And while we were adapting this play, Amy said to me, you know, he's written another one that has never been produced, never been put up on stage. Would you like to read it? And I said, yeah, sure, send it to me. And I was getting on a plane at the time. I think I was flying from Vancouver to L.A. or something. And so she emailed me the play, and I sat on the plane and read it. And the moment the plane landed and I had cell service, I called her and I said, look, we have to do this. This is great. It's five actors. It's kind of a very relationship, confusing relationship between a bunch of people and how they interconnect and how the different experiences between the people affect each other. We're calling it Neil LaBute meets How I Met Your Mother. It's funny, but it's got some heart to it. And it's a really great piece. It's a great character piece, and it's something that as an actor in film and television, I always try to get on stage as much as I can, because it's such a different experience, it's such a different discipline, and it's a very rewarding experience in a different way than film and television is. With theater, you have the immediacy of the audience; it's right there. The show is different every night. Every night it has its own life, and that's very exciting for an actor. So I'm excited. We're opening here in Toronto on December 7th. It'll be the world premiere of this play, and hopefully we'll continue doing it.
Well, that is very exciting, and I want to again thank you for making time this weekend prior to the opening. We've had the privilege of working with some other folks in Vancouver and Toronto, Empo Plow, Cassini Brothers with the Rail Action Studio in Vancouver, and also Omari Newton. Just did a great play up in your neck of the woods there in Canada. So we're very excited about repetitive strain injury. May I ask you, how did you, as a producer, how did you get involved with selecting the cast? Maybe we can drop all the names. You talked about Amy. You've got Ava, Mark. You've got Pat Kiley, who we know
Pat
from
Kiley. Yeah, Being Human. Pat's a friend of Amy's, and when we were putting the play together, Amy said, look, Pat should take a read of this, and he had the same reaction to the piece as I did, and it's great to have him here. Ava Marcus, she's a big name in theater here in Toronto, and she came to the piece again just as a friend, came in, read the play, and said, hey, let's do it. And that's kind of how it all came together. Is a bunch of us, we all knew each other, and we all just said, hey, let's put this piece together. Harry Judge is directing, again, another big director here in Toronto, theater director. So yeah, it's exciting, and it's really nice to work with actors that you've worked with before. Amy and I have done some things, worked together. Previously, we were both in Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds, and a few other things. But it's nice to work with fellow actors in the theater, because again, like I say, it's such a different experience and a different discipline. So yeah, it's going to be fun, I think.
Well, you know, I would agree with you. Some folks know me. I think you and Ms. Tapping and others know that I was a professional stage actor about 30 some odd years ago. And then went into the support services. So I really do have a lot of respect for stage work because of the intimacy. You must be excited for entering your final dress rehearsal for repetitive strain injury. You must be very excited to gets there in front of the crowd at the Toronto, it's called the Toronto Factory, right, where you guys are putting this on?
The Factory Theater in Toronto, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm terrified. I can't wait. I wish, I can't sleep. You know, there's a whole bunch of things going on because, again, it's such a different thing, right? It's a different muscle. It's almost a different industry altogether, and it's just getting used to that idea. But certainly, it'll be a lot of fun. I play a character who's very quick-witted, unlike myself in real life. So that's a little bit of a struggle. But I think it'll all come together. I hope.
No, it will. I'm sure that you guys are going to play the sellout audiences. And again, we thank you for giving us the opportunity to interview ahead of time, because we're going to generate some noise down here on Twitter this week. And feel free to block the Wormhole Writers account any old time this week for spamming your timeline.
Yeah. No worries. Please, anytime, Ken.
This repetitive screen injury was written by Rob Van Meen. He's a very talented writer, was an actor. How did you become acquainted with Rob?
Well, I didn't know Rob until this rehearsal process. Amy's known Rob for years. They're both from Saskatchewan, Canada, and they've worked together before. And Amy starred in Rob's previous play entitled Burn that Amy and I are adapting into a film. So they go way back, and I have just been brought into the fold recently, but. He's just flown out here for the last week of rehearsal, and with a new play, it's always interesting because not only are you working the characters and working the play, but it's also taking a look at the script because it is a new play and seeing where for the first time as a world premiere putting it up on its feet, it's interesting to see what adjustments are to be made. So, you know, we're working very closely with obviously Harry directing it, but also with Rob as the writer there. You're reworking certain pieces of the play, so it's a very intriguing process because you're bringing something to life for the first time.
Well, it looks very exciting. I know one thing for sure: if I was in Toronto, I'd come and see the play. But I'm tied down here. We're getting ready to wrap up our season on Wormhole Writers WHRU side. Who was your inspiration to become an actor and then pursue a career in entertainment, and how did you become interested in producing a repetitive strain injury?
I'm sorry, I just got a bear, I just didn't get all of that, Ken. So you're just wondering what my inspiration of in terms of producing and acting?
That's correct. What was your inspiration, and why did you choose a career in entertainment? And then how did that dovetail into becoming a producer? What inspired you to produce repetitive strain injury?
Well, you know, it's an odd thing. I never really remember wanting to get into the business. I always just wanted to do it. It's always just something that was in me and part of me. And then maybe a midpoint in my career so far, I started thinking, well, because as an actor, which I do love acting, but as an actor, you're basically always waiting for a bunch of other people to make decisions. You're waiting for someone to decide to write something, then you're waiting for someone else to decide to produce it, then you're waiting for someone else to decide to direct it and cast you. And so I always, from a very young age, wanted to diversify my base in the business and start trying to do other things in order to facilitate what I wanted to do, and therefore I always took an approach to writing, producing, newly directing. I directed last season on Sanctuary. Just being able to do different things in the business, it not only does it inform you for your acting and for everything else you're doing, but it also enables you to be more involved. So that kind of just carried through with when this piece came to me. I thought, well, you know, let's figure out a way to produce it and put it up, and it does come with a lot of work. There are hassles and difficulties involved, like anything, in putting something together. But ultimately, it's the most rewarding because then the final product is you're involved in many aspects of this thing coming to life.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, we do know that you did some great directing work in the final season of Sanctuary. We've got a question about Sanctuary a little bit later on. I'm glad to see that you've been in a lot of movies this year. We're going to talk about some of those. They were in your feature article. You've been very active. And now you're stepping up on the stage, and I think that's really superb. When you began your career as an actor, and you went into directing, what influenced you to pursue producing in specific? And do you plan to continue producing in the future?
I would like to, yeah. I've produced a little bit a few years ago with certain things, but my real foray into producing was really with Space Milkshake, the movie that I did with Amanda Tapping and Kristen Crook and Billy Boyd. That was my first real experience being a full-fledged producer on something. And again, I liked it. It was definitely a big learning curve. There's a lot of things to learn and things that you really got to know well in order to be able to put things together. But at the same time, it's such a rewarding experience. I mean, for me to be able to call up Amanda and say, "Look, I'm producing this movie. You should come do it. Let's keep working together. Let's keep all our friends working together." That's the basic impetus for wanting to produce, is to be able to hang out with my friends. I mean, I from a very young age, I only ever had two goals in this business. One was to do good work, and by that I mean work that I was proud of, that I could say, "Hey, like, that's something that I'm proud that I've done." And two is to work with my friends and create a circle that's constantly getting bigger, but basically it's just working with all your friends, and we create this big posse of people that go from project to project and work together forever. And I've been very lucky so far in being able to do that. And I guess wanting to produce is in a large part because I want to be able to continue doing that and to be, continue putting projects together and calling up my friends and saying, "Hey, let's do this, let's do that. Let's keep working together and having fun and doing this business that you know, I love." And so I guess that's the reason behind it.
Well, you know, the Space Milkshake really has been a phenomenal success. Kristen Crook, we all love her from her days, and the guest starred in Chuck. She's been in so many things, of course, working with Amanda. She had lots. So that's a really great goal. And, you know, the entertainment industry is extremely competitive. If there aren't people producing and directing, the product will never get to the stage, to the screen, or the, on the big screen. So kudos on your goal. Getting there, making it happen. So far, you know, the word is out about repetitive strain injury. I'm seeing a lot of activity. You guys are putting out some great pictures about what's the dress rehearsal. Are you pleased as the producer with the reception that repetitive strain injury is getting on social media?
Absolutely. And again, we were talking before we got on the show about the differences in the business and how the business is changing, and it is just, it's amazing the great tools that things like Twitter, Facebook are in order to put something together. If this were 15 years ago, it would be much, maybe 10 years ago, it would be much different way of putting something together. It would be much more difficult in being able to use things like Twitter and Facebook to get the word out there, and is a great help, and hopefully that'll you know, create more buzz about the show as it gets put up. Because like you say, putting things together is difficult, and you need all the help you can get, no matter who's in it or who's involved or how good it is, because it is a competitive industry. There are a ton of things going on and a ton of things happening, and you're competing with all these different things for people's attention. So in order to have things like social media working for you is it's a great asset.
Well, like I said, I really am looking forward to hearing more about the play, and of course seeing some behind the scenes stuff. You guys keep putting out great things from the dress rehearsals. I know you're going to knock them dead. Don't break a leg. Well, break a leg Friday night, please, Robin.
Yes. No.
The other thing that you've done well on this project in Toronto is you have a great radio station sponsoring you. How about a shameless plug for them, please?
Well, Indy 88.1 is sponsoring us. They've been very good in terms of getting the word out there. And I just love the station because it in this world of satellite radio and all these different types of things, Indy 88.1 came in as one of those kind of old school radio stations, like when I was a kid, like that I remember when I was a kid. They have a great eclectic playlist, great music they're playing, and I mean I tweeted a couple of weeks ago. I was like, "You're Indy 88. Would you go to the prom with me? Because it's such a cool radio station." So they've been great. They've been playing some good music and getting the word about the play out there. So, yeah, I mean, and again, that's another invaluable thing for us because I think that the tone of our play at RSI is in line with the tone of Indy 88, the audience, the people who listen to that station are hopefully the people who are going to come see the show.
Well, that's wonderful. And, you know, Toronto has been very active in Canada as a production area for a number of programs. I'm sure that you're aware, and there's still a lot of activity going on in Vancouver. A number of shows are still being shot there. A number of films are being shot there. But there was a little political uproar with the Save DC Film campaign. Apparently the politics, we had a similar problem here in the Bay Area, San Francisco, where they did not want to support the film industry. And there's been a lot of movement in Toronto. You're in the place where it's happening. A lot of shows. Matter of fact, when Agam Darcy's there, the first great show played. Being Human is shot there. There's a long list. So it must be exciting to be in Toronto with a lot of your contemporary and getting the support from local media there in Toronto for repetitive training.
Yeah, it really is great, and it's my hometown. So it's nice to be here and have my parents be able to come to the show, and so yeah, it's certainly. And Toronto also is a wonderful theater town. People come out, support it, and there's a good long history of theater in this city, and that'll continue. But yeah, the shooting thing is interesting too. I mean, I love Vancouver. You know, I've got a great soft spot for it. Obviously, we shot the show there, Sanctuary, and you know, it's interesting, but it's always in flux. Things. So sometimes Toronto is busy, sometimes Vancouver is busy. It goes back and forth. It would be nice if everybody were busy all the time, but unfortunately, that's not the case.
Well, again, it's very competitive. We've seen a lot of movement down here in the United States. A couple of big shows. Revolution was shot in one state and then moved to Texas this year. So these things happen. Getting back to repetitive strain injury, you're co-producing with Amy and Ava Marcus. Is this something that you guys had in the, on the burner for quite a while? You guys wanted to work together and make this project a reality.
Yes, I guess it's been about 6 months in the making. We came together and just talked about it for a little bit and talked about the feasibility, and then once we decided it was just let's go right at it. The difficult thing, the challenge with doing a show is that we're all actors, we're all working in film and television, and there's always the possibility of any one of us getting some offer and having to make a choice in terms of film and television choice or to stick with a show. So we were cognizant of that. We wanted to make sure that we picked the time of year that was the possibility was lessened of anybody having to take another job. So this time of year I think it's good. It's still a popular theater season. We're still that little bit of time before the holidays. And in a bigger sense, we're thinking that the goal is, the hope is that we can maybe try to put up a show, one show a year, because again, it's as an actor, it's those getting that stage work is invaluable to the rest of your work, no matter where it is.
Well, you know, I'd like to ask you. This is a question that I had that I didn't put into ahead of time, but looking at the factory in Toronto, and then there's a production company called, you know, something like that. It's called Company Kid Logic.
Kid Logic, yeah. Company
yeah,
Kid Logic. That's us.
That's you guys.
That's us.
And I looked at the website, and it says you guys are going to be bringing in, working on things and bringing in stars. So I presume you've got other projects that, you know, we won't look for spoilers here, but that your group will be putting together other exciting products for the Canadian market.
Yeah, and the reasoning behind the name is exactly that. It's like, because basically how it came about was like, hey, this is cool, let's do that. And it's kind of like a kid logic, right? It's like, let's just put this up, why not? And I think that's the same attitude we want to keep with any project that we do, is like, hey, this is fun, let's put this together. So yeah, definitely. Hopefully we'll continue doing that. And again, you know, regardless of, It goes back to my theory of having the posse of friends, right? Different projects will require different involvement from certain people, but as long as there's things always happening, that's the exciting part is to keep everything moving forward.
Well, that's great. Robin, at this point here, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Patricia. She has a number of questions about the repetitive brain injury. Patricia, are you there?
Yes, I am, Ken. Thank you very much. Yeah, just let's move on right back to talking a bit more about what you've done to create this play. You've worn a number of hats to make sure that this comes about, and you are acting in the play as well. That must make it a very long day for you to prepare for repetitive strain injury. Is that correct?
It does, and it also requires certain switching over, like you say, changing of the hat, if that's a thing. But because there are times where you're thinking about the producing end of it and what it needs to get up on its feet and put this thing together, and then to step into the acting role and to forget about all the other details and just focus on the performance and the character and the piece, because ultimately that's the most important. And so yeah, there are some long days, but you know, I love it. I'm a workaholic. I would have it no other way.
Well, it definitely helps in a career is to really enjoy what you're doing, and then it doesn't seem so much like work. You are also known as a hands-on producer with this particular play. Is that part of the plan, or was it something that you needed to do as the producer?
Well, I mean, we all just had to come together and really pitch in and figure out how to put it up. So, yeah, certainly. And it's interesting, too, because with the producing aspect, we never really discussed it between the three of us, Amy, Ava, and I, but we all just sort of gravitated to different roles and filled those, and whatever needed to get done got done, is getting done at present. So it's a good working relationship, and one of the great things about working with friends and people who you respect and love to work with is that no matter what happens, you know, if things, there's difficulties or things that there are challenges that you have to deal with, at the end of the day, everybody's having fun and everybody really wants to be here. And so any challenges just get dealt with in a fun way, as opposed to sort of worrying about it and trying to deal with this thing, because it is a large venture. It's a difficult thing to try and do, but if you're having fun, that's the main thing.
No, definitely. How long did this whole project take to go from the concept to the stage?
Well, I think the play itself is Rob. I believe he's written it over the last few years. But from the moment we decided, that the moment Amy sent it to me and I read it and we kind of decided that we should put this on, I think it's been about 6 months. I think it was the summer when we kind of started batting around the idea. And yeah, here we are. I mean, we're a week out. We open next Saturday. So it's great. It's fun.
How are advanced ticket sales so far?
They're pretty good. I think it's certainly a thing where people will, I think most people buy their tickets at the door, but we've had some good advance sales. We have a full house for opening, which is nice. We'll see how it goes.
When you decided on Harry Judge to direct, can you tell us how that came about? Why this particular individual as your director?
Well, Harry is a good friend of Amy's. When we started talking about who we would approach to be involved in the piece, Amy said, they suggested Harry immediately. Harry's a guy. Not only is he an actor, but he also is a very well renowned director. And for this piece, because it's such a highly paced, frenetic piece, frenetic text, you really need a director who has the bird's eye view of it and can see everything that's going on and really knows how to shape it and guide it. And certainly Harry has been that guy. And also we didn't have a very long rehearsal process. The 3-week rehearsal process is, there's not a lot of time for figuring things out in the moment. We all had to come in prepared, and Harry had to come prepared in terms of the entire piece and what it was going to look like and how the story was going to be told, and we certainly have done that. And for my experience, I've relied on him a lot to really give me insights into the character that I'm playing, and it's really comforting to have a director like that who you know has a good handle on the piece and you can trust to know how to motivate your character and the story.
How do you access funding to put a project like this together?
You just, go to the bank and, there's these things. What are they? These pieces of paper. Like, I just take these pieces of paper and write my name on them and then people give me stuff. I don't know. So we just kind of self-financed it and got some favors and kind of pulled things together. And I think that's realistically the way that you have to do it for the first one. And then hopefully when we get out of the gate and this one's a success, then we'll be rolling and we'll be able to have more finances to put other shows together. But the first one out of the gate, we kind of just had to suck it up and throw in, whether it would be financially or time-wise or both.
Okay. Do you see this this play ever ending up in other cities as a traveling performance?
I think it could be definitely a traveling performance. I think it's something it's a universal kind of piece. The experiences of the character are very relatable, and certainly the focus obviously right now is to make it a hit here in Toronto. But yeah, I think looking down the road, it would be amazing to be able to do it in anywhere. Maybe we'll come see you.
Yeah, you guys can all stay at my house.
Can we do it? Can we do the play at your house?
Oh, that would be more awesome.
You know? Okay, well let's talk after the show, Patricia. I think
definitely. I'm looking forward to it.
Now I know you've done some abnormal things, particularly when you guys were on that icebreaker in Sanctuary. But I want to let you know, Patricia's got an ice palace up there near the North Pole, igloos, nice beds, and don't you have some polar bears for Robin and
yes.
the crew to play with?
Oh, definitely.
I'm in. You had me at igloos. I'm in.
Well, I'll just make sure all my pet polar bears are well fed before you come.
Yes, please. Or, you know, maybe they can, you know, we have to be compelling actors in order not to get eaten, right? That is a good motivation to be good. Yeah.
Oh, definitely, yes. Do you have a musical score for the play?
We're working on the music right now. We don't have a composer per se, but it'll be a lot of contemporary music, and you know, certainly the motivation of working with Indie 88 and seeing the kind of playlist that they have out and the stuff that they're playing is certainly along the lines of stuff we're going to be selecting.
Okay. I suppose it's still early days, but if you do well, do you see this becoming a film or a television series?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because as I was mentioning to Ken, you know, Amy and I took Rob Van Meenen's first play and we've adapted it into a film, and we're in the process right now of putting it together. We're working with a company called Gearshift here in Toronto. I recently did a very, very cool horror movie called Torment. We just shot it over the summer with Catherine Isabel and I, and that was with Gearshift Films. So upon completing the screenplay for Burn, Rob's first play, we approached Gearshift and they quite liked the piece. So Amy and I were kind of like, you're right. I mean, it is early days, and I actually said to Amy, I said, you know, this should be, and she kind of finished my sentence. And said, yes, should we adapt it into a movie? I said, yeah, maybe. And she said, well, yeah, maybe let's just get the play off the ground first. But certainly that is a possibility. We haven't approached Rob yet, but given how enjoyable the experience of adapting his first play was, certainly that is a possibility because. You know, Rob has this wonderful ability to write these characters and has a very, very good eye for story and is also able to create these characters that are perfectly flawed. And it's a joy to be playing these characters and also working with them as a writer in terms of adapting into screenplays. So yeah, in answer to your question, long-windedly, I would hope so. I would hope that would be part of the future.
Well, we would look forward to it here at Wormhole Writers, I know for sure. So we will keep an eye on you guys, and hopefully you do manage to pull that off.
Yeah.
Being an actor and a producer in the same play must be quite challenging. Can you tell us a little bit about how you will pull that off?
Well, a lot of time. It's time management, which does not tend to be my strong suit, as you may have noticed already. But it's just being focused on what I need to do at what point, and not crossing the streams, if I can use a Ghostbusters reference. You know, when you're thinking about producing and the things that need to get done in terms of that aspect of the production, you need to focus on that. And then when it's time to get into rehearsal and work the play and the character, you need to let everything else go and fully concentrate on that, because ultimately that's the most important thing is the performance. So it's just taking discipline and being able to know what to focus on when you're focusing on something, give it your undivided attention. So, you know, I struggle with it, but I think I'm getting there.
I think a lot of us struggle with time management. That seems to be a human weakness all over.
Yeah.
What do you think you would be doing if you had decided not to go into entertainment and had chosen maybe another field of work? Where do you think your talents would lie?
I mean, obviously I would be a superhero.
I can just see you in a super cape.
Clearly. That's cute. Clearly. I mean, what would I be doing? I don't know. I mean, I, I'm a kind of a foodie. Maybe I'd be a chef. But I think superhero. No, I think I'd be a superhero. I think I'd be a superhero. I don't know what kind of superhero.
Batman.
Thank you. Batman.
Yeah, you're a wonderful Batman.
Robin, I know what we need to do. Once you get this play under your belt and you move on to the cities, we need to take you down to Hollywood and get you on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Agent Coulson and Ming-Na,
yeah.
Agent Melinda, and get you there on the show, guest starring. I think I'm going to lay out a few tweets this week in the talk. But you are a superhero. What are you talking about?
In my dreams, yeah.
No, Dr. Zimmerman, and you know your career. You've been very active. You've brought joy to people's lives, not only on screen and film and TV, but also in the convention world. And we hope to see you at more conventions. I didn't mean to break in, but you are a superhero because of the joy you bring to people's lives, Robin. And I mean,
well, that's very nice. Thank you very much. Maybe I can design a cape or something some tights. Maybe I'll get some tights.
Well, I'm looking for a Christmas present, and my cape's kind of worn out here, so I need a new cape, so get two, would you please?
Let's go cape shopping. You and me, let's go to cape shopping. I'll be your sidekick. Ken, I'll be your sidekick. It's perfect.
We'll get the big W, okay?
My name's already Robin. I'm a sidekick already. I mean, you know.
A W, an R, and then put Patricia. We need to have two letters. NP, North Pole, okay?
Yes, yeah.
Or PB, Polar Bear, Bears. So, Patricia, yeah. So go ahead. Sorry, I couldn't resist. I got a little bear. Please go back. Keep going.
Okay, thank you. Well, we all know that you just are totally in love with Amanda Tapping, but are there any other actors that you particularly admire?
I mean, ones that I've worked with or just in general?
Well, it could be in general, and it doesn't have to be someone who's alive. It can be anybody.
You know, it's going to sound odd, but I always had great respect, I still do, for a guy like Michael Douglas. And here's why. I love the fact that he's a guy who diversified himself in the business, and I love the story early on of him as a young actor getting the rights to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and producing that wonderful movie. And I always wanted to be that kind of person in the film business that not only focused on one thing, but was able to do was multifaceted in their abilities. And so I always look to those guys. I love Sidney Pollack. You know, a career like Sidney Pollack, it just amazes me. A guy who, a wonderful actor, a producer, a director, just what a wonderful career he had. And if I could have 10% of that career, I would be so happy. Because again, for me, and not a lot of people are like this. Some people are just want to focus on one thing, and sometimes I envy those people because they only have one thing to think about, but I was never like that. I always wanted to be involved in a number of different areas in a certain project. And when I had the opportunity, the great opportunity to direct on Sanctuary, it gave me that feeling of being electrified and having involvement in every aspect of the story, and that's something that I really gravitate towards. So when I see people in the industry like the guys that I just mentioned, it really inspires me to try and be like that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You did remind me, as you were talking about Michael Douglas, that a lot of his advantages, of course, were that he has a very famous father. And so he's already got a foot into the door of the business. Do you think that individuals that do not have family that are currently in the business, is it much more difficult for them to get their foot in the door, or does it just mean that, you know, being talented, you usually, if you stick with it long enough, you just seem to make it?
I mean, for me, I don't know. I don't know anything other than my own experience. And so from my perspective, I don't have anybody in the film business, there's no nepotism in my experience. So I don't know. But for me, yeah, it is a difficult business. But it also is a wonderful business. And it, I think, not to be pie in the sky or Pollyanna about it, but I think if you do work hard and if you do believe in it, in yourself, and you don't give up, and you enjoy the business enough, even in the difficult times. I mean, for me, I've like anybody, I've had, you know, spectacular disappointments in this business. But even in those times, I still feel like it's the best job I've ever had, and I would never want to do anything else. So I think if you have that attitude, I think you give yourself a great opportunity to succeed. And in terms of your comment about having a famous parent in the business, I would guess, and again, I don't know because it's not my experience, but I would guess that yes, there is a possibility of that making it an easier path for an individual, but at the same time, it could also be a hindrance because you're living in the shadow of this person, or maybe feeling like you're not living up to your father or your mother or whatever. So, you know, they're all different kinds of experiences. But I think ultimately, regardless of whether you have a parent or family member who is in the business or not, I think if it's something that you really want to do and you believe in it and it's in you and for the right reasons, I think you just got to keep sticking at it and again finding a way. And this comes back to the discussion about producing and stuff, right? It's about finding a way to do this. And if that means you have to go and put a play up or go and stand on a street corner and do something or whatever it is, you have to be proactive to do it, and I think that's what's always driven me is knowing that if you want to do something, you really got to do it yourself. Particularly in this day and age now, I mean, everybody is writing. Actors are writing their own things and producing their own things and directing their own things all the time because that's just the way the business is going. So it is a very, very big advantage to be proactive and do your own stuff. Be your own. Be a self-generator. That's the way to ensure that. Maybe not ensure, but give yourself a better opportunity, to put yourself in a better position to succeed.
Okay. Yeah. And I agree. The major factor in whether someone succeeds or not is whether they are willing to stick to what they're doing and continue to keep on trying, even in adversity. I have one more question to ask you before we turn things back over to Ken. And I guess he would like me to let you know, and I'm sure you already have been told by him that I was a Sanctuary team leader for 2 years. But, you know, I just love the show, and so this is the Sanctuary question.
Yes,
do you miss
please.
The show? Do you, if you could redo Sanctuary, if you could, you know, maybe do another year of Sanctuary, if they decided they were going to put it back on the air, would you jump at the opportunity to be Will Zimmerman again?
Absolutely. Best job I've ever had in my life. I love the show. I love the people who I worked with. I love the fans. I absolutely, there's no question. I would do it if I could only do one job for the rest of my career and it was Sanctuary, I would be happy. So certainly, I love the fact that the show ended the way it did because it was nice. It wasn't open-ended. It wasn't like we were thinking of coming back and then we didn't get to end it. I mean, I think we ended it nicely. But certainly, I do miss the show every day. I miss the people. I still see a lot of the people on a regular basis. But still, it's not like going to work with everyone every day and having that kind of fun. So certainly, there's not much to tell right now, but there are things in motion. Yes, in a little fledgling way, there are things in motion to try to breathe life back into the show, maybe in a different incarnation. But yeah, certainly it's something I miss. I love the show. I loved the character. I loved everything about it. I mean, it was a magical experience, and it was one of those things that when you look at it, just the way it came together, the way it evolved, it was like nothing else. It was like this blessed thing that we had for a long time, and it was amazing to have been a part of it.
Well, that's
and also I got to take my pants off all the time, you know. I literally.
It was a wonderful show, and we do know that the actors have moved on to different projects, and hopefully in the future everybody can be pulled back into Sanctuary if it does come to fruition, and we definitely hope it does. We will have our fingers crossed for you, and please let us know if there's anything we can do to help in any way. And Ken, please take over.
Well, thank you very much, Patricia. And Robin, thank you for your time. We're going to wind down with about five or six more questions. We've heard rumblings that there might be something coming. And, you know, a lot of series have turned into franchises that were placed on the shelf for a while. Let's take a look at Star Trek. We could look at Stargate. That came back for three iterations. And there are other famous series that have come back over time, over the history of television. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. But right now I wanted to ask you a little bit about something you did this year that we cover a lot of sci-fi programs as well as other networks, including NBC, ABC, Fox. But one of the roles you had this year was in a great new hit series that NBC has invested in called Defiant. And you were cast with a character called Miko. That was a very juicy part. Of course, we didn't like to see Miko get killed at the end there, but how did you get approached for that? Did you enjoy the role, being a guest star on the Defiance cast and crew?
I did. I had a great time on Defiance, and again, that was something that just came to me because of being in the sci-fi family, and I think it was maybe Mark Stern or somebody said, you know, you should be on the show. I was in Toronto at the time, and I've actually been invited back. I don't know how much I can talk about it. I don't think at all, really. But I really have a lot of respect for the gang at Defiance. They're a lovely bunch of people, Grant and Steph Leonidas and everybody. It's a wonderful cast. A wonderful crew, and again, it's nice to be in the extended sci-fi family and to continue that relationship, because sci-fi have always been great to me. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's an amazing, I gotta tell you, it's an amazing show. It's an amazing world that's been created there. It's a huge world, and there's so many characters, and it's such an intricate story that it's no surprise to me that it's a hit show, and it's got such a great fan following, because it really is amazing. The costuming, the set design, the stories that they're telling on that show are really quite fascinating, and it's great to be part of it.
Yeah, it's a great show. They're on hiatus until next June. I think they've timed the second season to coincide with Comic-Con San Diego. So we look forward to covering more of Defiance next year, and I just thought you were great. You know, the characters in there, and the Bio Men, and all the different people on post-apocalyptic Earth. It's kind of a popular theme. Sci-Fi's done a great job with this, and of course, that program is shot right there in Toronto. Is it not? They've got a really great set there.
An incredible set, and. Again, I'm right at home on the green screen, as you know. So when we were shooting on there's a lot of green screen shot in the show, and I love that color green. I'm used to it.
Well, you guys set the stage for that going back 6 years ago. Now I remember when Sanctuary came out as a web series, and it was so popular. Well, I remember because I ran something called, I worked with people called the Amanda Tapping Chat Club, and we had Amanda on. This is back before the days of Twitter and back before social media really took off in late 2006. But, you know, Sanctuary set the stage for green screen. And I remember the thing was so darn popular, it crashed the website, not once, but dozens of times. Defiance is a great show, and I hope you come back as another, maybe you can be son of Miko or something like that, but we won't go with, there's some changes coming at Sci-Fi, they've already happened. You've already mentioned that you're going to continue to expand horizontally in the industry, so I presume that means that you're going to be producing, directing, acting in on stage, on TV, and in film in the future, Robin. Is that true?
I mean, I would certainly hope so anyway, because I have no other skills. I can do nothing else. So I would hope that my career continues. Otherwise, I just have no other skills, no other job skills.
Well, now hold on. Patricia, don't you have a job up there to build igloos up near the North Pole? Isn't there something happening up there in Old Lake, Canada? Igloo construction?
I don't know how to do it, though. I would have to have Patricia show me because I don't know anything.
I think that you could probably handle official polar bear walker.
Hey, absolutely. Can we ride them? I would put a saddle on it. I'll ride them around.
Either that, or we're going to get you the Yellow Knife, and we're going to get you on CBC Arctic Air. And by the way, American TV shows. We want this program down here in the United States. Amanda Tapping's directing right now. She's been in Yellowknife. We want Robin on the show. Okay, I'll stop. I'll stop my rant. Patricia tells me what a great show it is, and we tweet with the people that are on it, and it's just such a great show. So before you can go to Yellowknife, Robin, you have to go to Patricia's, learn how to build the igloos, and then you can go up there and direct and produce some Arctic Air program. In all seriousness, back to your career. In the last year, a couple of years, going back to Beyond Sherwood Forest, I love that film on Sci-Fi. But you've been in a lot of the Good Witch Destiny, 3 Days in Havana, Scarecrow, Torment, with Catherine Isabel, who's an outstanding actress who I became introduced to in Stargate SG-1 back in 2006 when she was in the Ori village in Torment, Super Collider. And you've got a great holiday movie, which has already aired here in the United States, 12 Priests of Christmas. Are you having fun with these movies? You've been in a lot of movies a lot.
I know. No, I'm totally having I'm having a blast, and it's great to be able to work with such different people all the time. The movie you just referenced, 12 Trees of Christmas, I was able to work with Lindy Booth, who was wonderful, and Casper Van Dien is such a lovely, lovely guy, and Mel B from the Spice Girls, who was such a blast to work with, and she was great, it's such a treat to be able to. And also, doing movies is great because you're able to do different things all the time. And going from, I literally did 12 Trees of Christmas right after I did Torment. So I went from a horror movie with working with Katie Isabel, who's lovely, but doing a horror movie where I'm people being chased and stabbed and screaming and crying and shooting all at night and blood and all kinds of stuff, to shooting this lovely, nice little Christmas movie. That was sort of a throwback to a 40s film where we were kind of doing like a Cary Grant kind of thing. So, yeah, it is a lot of fun to be able to jump around and do those different types of roles in movies.
Well, I've enjoyed seeing you in some of the films, of course. We really enjoyed you in Cassie Van Dien follows us on Wormhole Rider. So we like family movies. On Lifetime Network here in the United States on the Hallmark Channel. We're covering one recent right now with Andy Garcia and Mary Louise Parker, Chris Conway. This movie, The 12 Trees of Christmas, I believe it's coming out in Canada next weekend?
I think it's the 23rd it's coming out, I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really wonderful. Keep it up, Robin. You know, we love to see you in so many different roles, and you've done great. And speaking of movies, you produced Space Milkshake, which was very well received by the fans. You know, it was a hit at all the conventions you went to. I know that it was the talk of AT7, which we covered last year. We had some reporters over there, and we were great with an interview with Dennis Illick, who was over there photographing it, and with Ms. Haig. So this is a loaded question. If you can't speak about it, as I understand, are there any plans for a sequel to the Space Milkshake to carry on the legacy of the milkshake?
Well, at this point, it is a possibility, but the reason why it's taking so long is because we're gonna change our distribution model for that movie, and what Rob Merrilies, my producing partner, and I are doing is we're gonna set up a website where people can download the movie and sort of like a direct download so people can get the movie in that way, because we found difficult, you know, the middle managers of distribution companies were kind of slowing down the process of people being able to see the film. So we're in the process of that. I know a lot of people are haven't seen the film. They're anxious to see it. I would stress that it is coming out, and I know everybody's been patient, but please be a little bit more patient, because the movie will get out there. And then once we have that set up, then we're going to look at where we can go with the franchise, because I'm telling you, that was such a fun film to do. Billy Boyd is hilarious. So is Amanda. She's wonderful in it. Kristen Kruk is amazing. I mean, it was such a blast getting the voice of George Takei. I mean, it was such a fun thing that certainly we want to continue the life of that franchise.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, you talked about the distribution model, and this is off the path that model of distribution is changing radically. When we first got into the Wormhole Riders, we began, this actually goes back to 2006. There was an iteration of this that I won't say that was not entirely successful. We had a little bit too much fan obsessionism going on. But when we got involved, there wasn't a lot of online viewing of the television programs. And there were several programs, I'm not going to mention them, that because the online viewing wasn't being counted, they didn't get past 2 years.
Right.
Some didn't make it past a year. And we're talking, okay, I'll drop a couple names. Alcatraz, beautiful show. Shot in Vancouver, shot in San Francisco. Didn't make it past the first year because they didn't have the online model. Another one, Steven Spielberg, Terra Nova. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars. That didn't make it past a year. And there's been a reluctance to recognize that online viewing where people can book it on their mobile device, on their phone, on their tablet. It's finally come to fruition in the last 18 months. You believe this is where the industry is going, now that there is the revenue model to support the viewing on demand and counts of use, which is what the advertisers do, to be able to pay for these products.
I think definitely the way to do it is to have people able to I mean, it's already happening, right? I mean, it's basically the Netflix model of people being able to choose what they want to watch and purchase those things and be very selective about what they want to get. And I think, you know, the sci-fi genre has always been one to challenge the mold, to change the rules, to break old conventions, and I think it's certainly doing that now in terms of people wanting to watch what they want to watch, and that's what our approach is trying to get it out there, and maybe certain people don't understand the film or don't think it's great, but there are a lot of people who definitely want to see it, and we want to make it accessible to them. So, you know, definitely we're going after that model.
Well, we want to see Space Milkshake on there, and what's happened, I can't speak for any given network, but I can say this, that we're seeing the monetization immediately after. Episodes are aired on Canadian, UK, and United States television shows. The next morning, you can buy the episodes, not just on iTunes, but on YouTube and through other methods. And I know that Space Milkshake will be a huge success because everybody wants to get their hands on it. So we can look to 2014. Do you think maybe first quarter?
First quarter. Yeah, we're almost there. It does take longer because it's difficult to put these things together. But once they get going, then definitely the movie will be out there.
Outstanding. Well, we look forward to that. We've only got a couple more questions. Robin, you've been very active on social media. Has your experience with social media been mostly good over the years? Conventions, your product that you work on?
It's been entirely good. The interaction with people has been amazing. I mean, the great thing about working on shows that you love, I love the things I do. I love Space Milkshake. I love Sanctuary. I'm a fan of those things. It's not only my job, but I'm also a fan. So I feel like I'm Cy Sperling. I'm not only the hair club president, I'm also a client. But I am in terms of I love what I do, and social media affords me the opportunity to connect with other people who like the show or want to talk about it or want to connect on that level. So yeah, absolutely. I've had a great time connecting with fans and talking with people and get not only getting word out there about projects but also having a dialogue, and that's what social media allows you to do.
Well, we want to thank you for interacting with us. We watch a lot of social media go on, and one of the things that I'd like to share with the fans, maybe you can as well, is, you know, a celebrity like yourself, an actor, producer, director, Ms. Happing, so many others, Ryan Robbins, focus on Sanctuary. The fans send tweets at you guys, and some of them, we see them upset that you guys can't respond to 10,000 tweets. What's up with that, Robin? Why can't you just spend your whole life responding to the tweets?
Well, because I need a team of people to work with me. But you know what? I'm gonna start tweeting more. I've been wasting about 6 or 7 hours a day sleeping, which I don't need to do that. I'm gonna change the game right now. No more sleeping, tweeting. You know.
And, of course, I'm being totally sarcastic and facetious. But you know, fans, Robin responds to a lot of tweets. So does Ms. Tapping. So do all the great folks from Sanctuary and the other shows as well. So thank you for all the tweets. And, fans, if you don't get a response back, you know, like today's your birthday from Robin, he might be, you know, getting 1 or 2 hours sleep a day as he tries to get ready for this play in Toronto, repetitive strain injury. And the great folks at Company Kid Logic and the factory, they follow me on Twitter. But, and by the way, folks, I apologize that we have not been putting out tweets. We've had a problem here at our headquarters in San Francisco with the Internet today. I don't know what it is. I think it's Henry Frost didn't check. It's your fault?
Yeah, it's my fault.
Well, okay, good, thanks. Good. Patricia, I found somebody that we found fault with today. No,
yes.
But we will be putting the article out. But again, a plug for the great folks at the factory in Toronto, Robin. Coming up, premiere, sold out this Friday. How long is the run? You're going from December 6th through the 15th. Is that correct?
Yep, just limited engagement. So, we can get your tickets fast. They're going.
Well, we're going to be pumping those up every day all this week and trying to get folks to immigrate to Toronto to see the show.
Please.
So get ready for that. One last question before we do our goodbyes. What's next for you, Robin, outside of the fact that you got to get back to rehearsal, dress rehearsal for RSI? Can you give your fans the insight into what you're cooking up in the future?
Well, looks like we're going to go into the holidays. Obviously, we're going to take a little break, and then I'm going to go into pre-production on our next film project, which is Rob Van Meenen's a play Burn that we've adapted. Right now the title is Love Spent, so that'll start up the new year.
Burn film sounds good. Is this are we going to see you on Indiegogo, Kickstarter, or do you guys have it all worked out financially? You're ready to rock and roll?
I think we're getting it together, and we're pretty much there, ready to rock and roll. So we'll be diving in right as 2014 clicks over.
that's very exciting. And, of course, we hope that you have a wonderful holiday season. We, too. This is, folks, this is our second-to-last broadcast. We might do two more broadcasts. We're working on something with a major show, but they might want to push it into our 2014 season. But we have one more show. But before we get into that and talk about that, Robin Dunn of Toronto, of Repetitive Strain Injury, RSI, thank you so much for spending over an hour with us today to talk about your career, this great new play, and you know, we're on with your time. Please give our best to all the cast members, and go knock them dead this Friday night.
I will definitely, Ken, Patricia, and everybody at Wormhole Riders. You guys are great support. Thank you so much, and anytime, anywhere, I'd love to talk to you.
Thank you, Robin. It's great to hear from you. And we both wish we were there to watch the opening performance. I know it's going to be great.
Thank you so much. And I just want to let you in on something. I didn't tell you at the beginning of the show, but I've been out on the street here talking to you guys. And this entire time, I have not been wearing pants. So I should go back indoors.
Does that radio station have a video camera, Robin? Please, would
yeah.
you go back? Get
I'll send you a picture.
All right,
guys.
Thanks.
I got to get back in. I love you both. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Robin. Have a great day.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Patricia, thank you so much for co-hosting from Cold Lake today. If you could give me a call on my cell after the show, after we finish the music going out, I'd appreciate it because we're still having internet connection problems here. But, folks, we're going to be up what probably will be our last show of the year next Saturday at 9 a.m. with a talented executive producer, screenwriter, director, Shernold Edwards. She has been with The Listener. She has been with Degrassi, The Next Generation. She's currently with the great folks at Entertainment One, Tagon Pillar, Haven, which is on Showcase. They just started their season about 4 weeks ago in Canada, and they're coming up to the finale here. Shernold's episode this coming Friday night is When the Bow Breaks on Haven. It's a two-parter, two-part finale, so this Friday make sure to tune in to Sci-Fi and see her great work. We'll be with her the morning after the When the Bow Breaks episode is on, and we can talk about all of the work that she's done and what to expect as Haven does its season 4 finale on Sci-Fi and then leading up to the same finale in Showcase. I know Patricia loves Haven, too. Patricia, if you could hit the ending music and end the show and then give me a call, I'd appreciate it.
Not a problem. Looking forward to it, Ken. And thanks, everybody, for joining us at Wormhole Riders, You Decide Radio.
Bye-bye, folks.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, not a problem.
You let the song go all the way out, but you let it in, right?
It's still playing. I just am not listening to it at the moment. I'm letting it go right, as you said, to the end.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
That's okay. I've got a bunch of tweets out there.
But if this happens with Entertainment One, who we're going to approach to maybe produce Be Among the Stars, it's going to be quite a bit.